Oh shit. I started Full Cast After Dark from the Channel 6 account. Oh god. Y'all, we're doing so good.
Did you kill it?
Yep. Okay. The new space is called Well Shit.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Sports.
I like some guy pointing out that 9 Michigan State players beating up 1 Michigan player in the tunnel takes Michigan State back to fake Batman status.
I only use my fists.
I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Stanford Bulldogs first in the house tonight.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah, Spencer, I want to test something real quick.
Mm-hmm.
How many Sanrio characters can you name in Mac Brown's voice?
Bad Bats Maru.
Do the frog.
Karapi? Is that Karapi?
I think he'd say Karapi or something, right?
Karapi.
Karapi.
Mm-hmm.
And hello, of course, there it is.
Hello, Kitty. Hello, Kitty.
Hello, Kitty.
Thanks. That's all I needed.
Okay, that's our.
There are others, but I really just wanted. Bats Maru was really the one I wanted, and you led with it, so I'm good.
Okay, sorry, I have a request. Dadoki Yummy Chums.
Dadoki Yummy Chums. Pom Pomperin.
Let's see, who's here tonight? Hi, Podcat. Hi, Jamie. Dylan.
Hey, Podcat, per our conversation like 11 months ago, I am going as Edward James Ole Miss for Halloween. I will be wearing a Battlestar Galactica flight suit and a bow tie.
Can I tell you about a car I saw today?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
I passed a tow truck. Like, yeah, this is a tow truck. And on the back of it, it had a decal that said, Toe Fetish.
That's funnier than the truck Spencer saw yesterday.
That had the Jair Bolsonaro sign that was like,
oh, I saw
Jair Bolsonaro like 22, but it was in Cobb County.
But it took up half the tailgate of the truck.
It was the shape of it was like as if Jair Bolsonaro was this kid's child playing soccer locally.
Yeah.
Mark Ennis is here. Louisville's own. Having a day.
God, I thought you said Mark Emmert, and I was like,
Mark Emmert is here.
Let's cyber bully.
We can get going. Big Sky's here.
All right,
yeah,
Big Sky's
here.
Let's go. We can start.
All right, yeah, let's go. Let's go. Big Sky's here. We got to get this show on. Ready?
Full Cast After Dark for men.
Welcome to the Full Cast After Dark.
Dracula noises.
If we're usually wolves, then I think the Halloween noise is just person sound.
Oh shit!
Person sound.
Is that what werewolves are? From if a wolf becomes a werewolf, do they turn into a man?
They're
a wereman?
A wereman? Yeah. All the wolves are like, it's fucking weird. He stays inside all day and he wears pants. It's so disturbing.
Yeah, when a wolf is a big nerd, all the other wolves are like, you were raised by people.
Yeah. You go to an office, you freak.
I want an email. Leave me alone.
I want to purchase things with fiat currency, loser.
But I want to find a good deal first.
What a dork. What an absolute dork.
Does this mean this is our spooky full cast? Spooky full cast.
Listener, you are Romulus and Remus.
Hey, I'll tell
and
you
a we them wolf titties.
I'll tell y'all a ghost story. Ryan, they're teats. Been over this. Y'all want to hear a ghost story?
Yes, please.
Tennessee whooped Kentucky's ass so bad tonight that there was a celebratory shot of Willie Martinez on the sideline.
Did you know that Willie Martinez was still on staff there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I find it best for my own health if I maintain awareness of his location at all times.
Here, I have another spooky story for you. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's the box score for Oklahoma State today.
Oh, Jesus.
Let me open up this chapter of the Necronomicon. Oh, my eyes! Bleeding from the sight of so much evil, and yet, reader, listener, I must go on. I can share some stats with you. First of all, that's a 48-0 score. Second, it was 35-0 at the half. 35-0. How bad did it get? Gunnar Gundy made an appearance the game. Yeah.
There's a Gunnar Gundy.
There is a Gunnar Gundy. They named him that. They have the most alliterative pair of quarterbacks in the Big 12, Spencer Sanders and Gunnar Gundy.
Sounds like between the two of them, they got about as much power as a noisy cricket.
Hey!
I don't even have a joke about how OANN told me this was a resounding Oklahoma State victory. This is sad and nightmarish.
It's been a busy weekend for Oklahoma State. Like, cut them some slack here. Like, their head coach is breaking into Nancy Pelosi's house.
Yeah.
He did not have time to prepare the fellows to play Kansas State today.
Hey, speaking of white-on-white crime, did y'all catch the end of A&M Ole Miss?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like that cool part where Lane figured out what worked?
That's it. Yeah, when Lane figures out your defense.
Bye-bye.
I like that A&M has decided to do the most maddening thing you can do to a fan base when you have a struggling offense, and that is only be good in an emergency situation. Every time this year that A&M is like, ah, fuck, gotta move, like, they move the ball, they take big shots, and they see some success from it, they score touchdowns. Every other time when it's not like, uh-oh, Mario Music's going fast now, just like, well, what from Uncle Jimbo's bag of tricks can we pull? Ah, look at this. A clever 3-yard route on 3rd and 10. They'll never see this coming. Mwahaha.
Yeah. One thing about this, Ole Miss has in their post-game reverie posted a video of Jimbo saying, why do you want to go to someplace where you're winning all the time?
Like Illinois. Why would you want to commit to a winning program like Illinois? Or UConn?
And then they posted a whole bunch of, like, shit-posting meme images of Lane Kiffin smoking on that Jimbo pack RIP Bozo theme. That's what they did.
That's a pricey pack. That is a premium brand.
Premium. That's a $95 million three-point loss to an Ole Miss team, which, as far as I know, is sewn up of odd parts thrown off other teams.
Here's what I would say is the funniest part of this weekend for A&M. Obviously, they lost to Ole Miss, but you can look at this and be like, well, they were in it for most of the game. They actually got, I thought, very good quarterback play from Connor Wegman, considering, this is the third quarterback to start for them this year. And Ole Miss is 15 and has only lost once, and Texas A&M has lost a whole lot more than once. That's not the funny part. Funny part is that also tonight, South Carolina just looked like absolute dog shit against Missouri. A week after beating A&M, South Carolina didn't crack 200 yards of offense until the last play of the game. A meaningless 17-yard completion in a 23-10 loss at home to Missouri. Again, the South Carolina team that just beat Texas A&M to get ranked, just barely, went out and immediately coughed up, like, was like, ah, you've seen my real form.
I would point out that this is now the time for Shane Beamer to do what would be consistent with all of his other post-game speeches, the ones where he's like, I don't even know how we won that. I'm just so happy that these kids managed an aberrant result given what I know is their level of talent. I'm so happy and so proud of them. He should have just walked out after the game and been like, this is the kind of dog shit I expected.
This is more like it.
I'm totally not surprised by this.
Yep.
This makes a lot more sense to me. I like Carolina just sort of popping in at number 25 and then leaving, just like flashing a little light.
Yeah.
I brought chips.
A Gamecock gam.
Carolina, the guy who gets hired at your office for a week and then quit. I proved I could do it.
Yeah, I just wanted to see the bathroom. That's it. I heard
good things.
I heard you can really smoke it up in there. There was one Mizzou player who said, I think we proved who the real Columbia is.
God.
Like, you're goddamn right. You're goddamn right you did. Honestly, it is the superior Columbia. Does anybody dispute this?
I don't even think South Carolina disputes.
I've never been to Como. It's hard to imagine a lot that's worse than Columbia, South Carolina.
People who live in Columbia are like, yeah, this place sucks. I love it.
Hey, there's nothing interesting on right now, so I think I'm actually going to go back and watch the Oklahoma State game from the beginning.
God. It's pretty great.
Oh, God. Let's see how this
goes. The winning K-States we got used to for the past decade or two, they're plotting and blah, blah, methodical. This shit is some 90s K-State. Yeah. Like, yeah. Late 90s, they were streaking up and down the field. It was fun as hell.
The other Big 12 thing that is... I still feel like we haven't talked about enough. And I see Joel is in here, so I feel like we have to.
Hey, Joel. You want to join us?
TCU remains undefeated.
Ooh.
And not just undefeated, but like Sonny Dykes is the first Big 12 coach to start his Big 12 tenure 8-0. I just hope, listen, I hope Iowa is looking at TCU and understanding that like TCU walked away from a longtime success story. I'm sure without knowing the details of it, that ruffled some feathers and people were like, no. Gary Patterson built this program, you know, blah, 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 blah. Seems fine. Doesn't seem to be a problem.
I don't know, Ryan. They're giving up a few too many points.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
No, it's...
You're right. Plus, what am I talking about? Iowa righted the ship this week.
That they did. Oh, my. Oh, my. Brian Ferentz has figured out offense. I think it's time to extend the young man. It's quite possible he finally had sex, honestly.
Listen, you know, there are a lot of teams who could use Brian Ferentz's expertise, frankly. Nobody. We did no introductions.
We'll just do it. We'll just do it peacefully.
I'm Karopi.
393 yards by Iowa. By far their most explosive day of the year.
They almost covered the over-under by themselves.
I know it's almost November, but are we worried about cramping?
That's what I was going to say. Please say they were cramping. Like, oh, God, I ran 20 yards. Oh,
this fucking sucks. We got to play someone besides Northwestern next week. Well, lucky for you, on your schedule is Ohio State. You're going to be a...
Oh, that's like opposite Northwestern.
Sorry. Northwestern plays Ohio State. I take it back. So, well, that'll be a lot of fun. Much was made earlier this year of Colorado challenging for the title, one of the worst Power 5 teams ever. Northwestern, if not for the decisive field goal against Nebraska, would be right there. Yep. Like, beating Nebraska is it really blemished their perfectly awful record.
Oh, poor Northwestern. Came to America hoping for a better life. And what did they find here but nothing but struggle and pain?
He's crying in his Range Rover.
Oh, Mammy. It's so hard here in America.
My children, they'll be forced to play lacrosse.
I want to come back to Ireland, where we beat Big Ten teams.
Playing the exact same teams, but yeah, but they believe them to be much easier over there.
My whole theory of this being an elaborate tax dodge, the 2022 Northwestern Wildcats went over to Ireland to establish an offshore fund, and the rest of it has just been downhill from there.
That would explain why they're like, give us an $800 million stadium, please. Wouldn't you like to watch this in a fancier place?
I like that some orthodontist in Evanston is like, over my dead body, pal. No.
Holly, are you still watching the Oklahoma State game?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got distracted. It's 11:02 in the first.
Okay.
K-State strikes first, folks. We'll see what happens.
I feel like sometimes we unfairly single out people like Jimbo Fisher or Mario Cristobal, who are ballyhooed saviors of a program who have yet to deliver on that. Cristobal, I feel like we can include him that based on what he did at Oregon as well as his current track record at Miami. Jimbo attracts this because he has
getting recruits, bro. Contract. You don't know. You're just mad because Miami's getting all the recruits.
We're just getting all these like hot recruits, and we're going to the Big Ten, bro.
Bro, once we link up with Rutgers, they got beaches.
Yeah.
They can add their beaches to our beaches, and then
just the romance of a Miami fan and Rutgers fan looking at each other. Oomps, oomps,
oomps, oomps, we're not so oomps, different, oomps, you and I. Oomps, oomps,
oomps. Yeah, bro.
We both struggle with Maryland.
Yeah. As a concept and as a football team. Like, what is it, bro? Is it like, you know, Old Bay Spice, Virginia? Is it South Jersey? I don't know.
What even is an Oriole?
Yeah, it's fucked up. Birds aren't real. How can Orioles be real? So,
except Sebastian,
who's a bird made of cocaine. That's he's why real. He's white.
I've seen him get arrested.
He got arrested. He's got a record. He has to be real, bro.
He
has to be real.
Sebastian sold me a gun. He can't be fake.
The gun's real.
The gun's real. Therefore, the bird is real.
This is my long way of saying that tonight, Michigan
State.
Saying
I bought a fake gun?
Yeah, bought a fake gun off a real bird.
Oh, shit, I did. Fuck.
Okay.
Battery powered.
As opposed to buying a real gun off a fake bird. That's.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about the other $95 million man. I don't believe it's fully guaranteed like Jimbo's because no one's as guaranteed as Jimbo,
nope.
Baby.
Nope.
Yeah. No one else is that thirsty. No one else is that parched walking up to Jimbo Fisher and being like, water!
Marry me!
Marry me! I'm so lonely!
Marry me! I'll give you my kidneys and the prenup! Both of them!
I'll give you ranches! The guy I wanted to talk about is Mel Tucker, because
that's unfair because the Hellraiser demons move the chains and A&M doesn't. So
wow.
I'm sorry. Please go ahead, Mel Tucker.
So Mel Tucker and Michigan State tonight played Michigan, and they lost. They weren't particularly competitive, and really only
How many points did they score?
So they scored 7.
Hmm.
And like a kid before a movie, they ate all of it in the first quarter, and then they were done. They're like, "Oh, oops, got 7 points worth of junior mints," and they're all gone in the first quarter. They rushed for 37 yards. They rushed for 37 yards.
How many yards did Michigan rush for?
They rushed for 276.
Jesus. So good God. I honestly didn't know. I knew it was very high, but you went like 40 yards higher than I thought it was.
It really only took some like classic Jim Harbaugh dithering and like elephantine pace and a couple of J.J. McCarthy-like wanderings to sort of make this anything but a blowout.
They also, like Michigan kicked a lot of field goals early in this game, too.
They did. Michigan this year kind of works like a hydraulic press, right? Like a bowling ball and a hydraulic press.
Wait, see where this is going.
You know, it may not seem like it's doing anything, but then mm-hmm. it just keeps crushing. And by the fourth quarter, if you haven't scored a bunch of quick touchdowns on them, they'll just eventually reduce you to dust. That's kind of their thing. They're a crushing force. And that's basically not the thing I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about how Michigan State really did display real fight in this game. And by real fight, I mean they whooped up on somebody in the tunnel. And I hate this because it means James Franklin is right. I hate it when James Franklin is right.
Did they do this just to prove James Franklin right? Did they work into a shoot here?
They really might have, because this looked to be like 9-on-1. According to Jim Harbaugh, like might be a broken nose involved from the one player, the one Michigan player or the two Michigan players caught up with like 9 or 10 Michigan State dudes whooping up on him in the tunnel. I just want to know how do you, like, that's not a good sign when you have the energy to fight after a game. That's really not good. I thought you had this whole time where you could get that out.
Maybe that's conserving energy for the main event.
I mostly like that the central premise of this is like, this is Michigan's fault because you can't expect these people to have to walk next to each other.
Right. The thing they do like the entire football game.
Right. You can't put them close to each other. You mean like the way they are? Have they ever been on a bus or a plane or like, actually, if you told me, yeah, you can't put Michigan State can't fly a commercial, they start punching passengers, they get panicked in the tight space, they just start fighting. Be like, yeah, that tracks. That fucking tracks.
It's their whole claim to fame is standing in a tight space. They That's should be true. Awesome at this.
Oh, you know it smelled terrible in that horse too.
Yeah.
Oh god.
So many farts. Yeah.
That's a lot of protein farts.
I think there's another Big Ten game that was pretty high on comedy. Penn State, valiant effort against Ohio State, and the final score is a bit deceptive.
Disagree. How could a number be deceptive?
Remember, we're going to get the Oklahoma State, their private number verification force is going to take a look at this. 44-31, but it was very close until the last few minutes when just like 18 bad things happened at once for Penn State, which usually they can handle 17 bad things at once. Yeah. They can, you know, 12 bad things can happen on a Penn State touchdown drive. There was one drive that had multiple missed field goals and a fumble on the goal line that nevertheless resulted in a Penn State touchdown.
Can I poke that for a second?
Please.
Because... I'm just going to poke. Yeah.
Yep.
Just going to poke it for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So get your on third and one with like goal to go, basically.
Oh, you've started way too far into this, but go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, folks, K-State's got a 2-score lead.
Wonder well, where this is going.
Oklahoma State's got fight. I bet they'll come back.
Could you monitor? Also,
seriously, I cannot overemphasize how much Deuce Vaughn looks like he already has a sitcom. He has like sitcom smile.
I love that.
I love it whenever he scores a touchdown, they post his picture in the corner and he's like, that's a deuce moment. Like he's like got finger guns going like, haha, you just got deuced.
Like he's the protagonist, but he somehow also has the energy of the best friend who everybody goes woo whenever he comes in the room.
Okay, so Spencer, we are in, to clarify for everybody...
I'm excited to see where this game goes.
We are in the fourth quarter. At this point, Ohio State leads this game 16-14. Where do you want to begin?
I want to pick up after they've gone deep into Ohio State territory, after a couple of pass interference calls have gotten them into the red zone. And they face a crucial third and one.
Yes.
And they've been running the ball pretty well.
Yeah, they had been passing a lot on this. Like Parker Washington had a day the whole time, but he'd had at least one big catch on this drive. But yeah.
Right. So they've been doing pretty well, and they had third and one.
Yep.
And you think, oh, you know, like you'll run it, and if you don't get it, maybe you run it again, right?
Yep.
They don't do that. They engage the Clifford mobile. They throw Sean Clifford downfield for a hopeless deep route that goes nowhere. It does nothing. And then they send the field goal team out. Okay. Cool. They false start on the field goal.
Correct.
Then it goes to fourth and six.
Mm-hmm.
So now, okay, definitely kicking.
But when they false start, it doesn't get called until like kind of late and the kicker's already kicked and has missed, but go ahead.
Yeah, and he's missed, and he doinked.
Yeah, he's pushed it wide, yeah.
Right. So then they get fourth and six, and when they make the kick, Ohio State gets called for one of the weirdest penalties.
They don't make the kick. This one misses as well.
I've never seen this penalty call before.
Yes, they miss the kick, but Ohio State does indeed receive a penalty.
Yeah, for like crowding the center.
Have you guys seen this before? Because I don't. But
I am aware of it. It's like a safety thing where they've basically said. I think this is true on punts as well. They've basically said like you can't put two guys over the center.
No, I get it. I just don't think I've ever seen it.
Correct. Yes, it doesn't. It doesn't get called that often. You are correct.
Yeah. So they get called for that.
Yep, but that's a 5-yard penalty, so we're back at fourth and one.
So naturally, we're going to get a third shot at this field goal. Nope! James Franklin, master of game management!
Yep.
Theoretician to the gods! comes out and decides to go for the 4th-and-1. Okay, not the worst call. How do they do it when they've been running the ball? Well, they come out in a wing, and they come out in the Maryland fucking tee.
Yep.
And did then they shift to the literal oompty oomp formation.
They shift to empty. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Where they shift,
they shifted from full to empty.
Mm-hmm. They shift from mm-hmm. full to empty with a 4-wide receiver diamond formation about 2 feet off the boundary to the left. And on the right side, they split wide Tyler Warren's big ass.
Jersey number 44, if I recall.
Jersey 44. Upset. All right. When your inches is also like your neck. That's yeah. it. Like, yep. yeah, like yep. Tyler Warren built like a fucking radiator, right? They put this giant water heater of a
throw
man
it
out there.
Throw it to Bowser!
Bowser's got terrible hands, man.
Not in this case! Bowser for the first down! Because Sean Clifford whips what is actually a really dangerous slant straight to Tyler Warren's huge self. Yep. And Tyler Warren, God bless his soul, boxes out. Like, he actually, like, he catches it, and when he gets up, he looks stunned. He's like, oh, I caught it. Okay, cool.
You have a number 44 flying through the air on 4th-and-1. That was...
It looked more like an alley-oop you throw where the guy on the other end can't dunk, so he just lays it in instead.
When your only game management motto is they'll never see it coming. Yeah. Not whether it's a good idea, right?
It was awesome. I remember the announcers during this, they're like, okay, in this look, Penn State's probably going to run to the right. Okay, and then the look completely changes. I think Clifford's going to run it up the middle. No, surprise. It's a fucking slant to number 44.
We'll throw it to the dude with a 700-pound squat. That's
James Franklin's whole goal this day was
that,
like,
I'm into this.
James Franklin's whole goal was like, what if we make Joel Klatt delighted?
Not a good aim. Not a good aim.
What if we
Klatt offense?
What if we tickle Joel Klatt?
All right, so then they run for a yard. Okay, mm-hmm. they've got the first down. They're on the 9. They run for a yard. Then Clifford passes underneath to Mitchell Tinsley. Tinsley fumbles?
Yep, correct.
And there's this endless review. It feels like this red zone possession goes on for like 30 minutes.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Then there's a review. They say he didn't score. They say it's on the 1. Clifford runs again, and then they go for it on 4th-and-goal at the 1 again. And they line up in what? The Maryland tee.
and drew it up.
And Catron Allen is stoned in the backfield. He is stopped, and only with excellent balance and by leaning as hard as he possibly can, manages to sort of like side slip into the end zone as if he were like saying, oh, excuse me, like, and then gets in.
If it sounds, dear listener, like Penn State was having to exert superhuman effort to score, that is exactly what this entire game was like. It's like Penn State was just breaking itself on the wheel just to get into the end zone, whereas Ohio State is like, oh, got a ball, guess I'll start running, touchdown, oh no, you gotta do all that shit all over again.
The funny part was Ohio State was also efforting, but in just far stupider ways. Like, and here, I'll do my Zen Ohio State thing. So, a lot of people look at the first half of this game and they're frustrated. And I get that. All emotions are valid. I accept those emotions. I don't question them. They look and they say, why is Ryan Day calling 3-yard short passes on 3rd-and-10? Why is Ryan Day throwing the ball behind the sticks so much in ways where Penn State's easily ready to jump on them? Why Marvin Harrison, you know, had, I think, 10 catches in this game. Why didn't he have 20? Why did, at one point, Ohio State on 3rd-and-6 run the ball up the middle, get 4 yards, and then kick a field goal on 4th-and-2? That's confusing. My thing is this. If you only ever do the things that you're good at, that's kind of boring. Isn't it more fun to see, like, wake up one day and be like, hey, what if I can paint?
Are you saying this is their year of yes game?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's
okay,
right.
They're Shonda-ing their offense.
You'll never know what you're capable of if you don't try things that you're not, if you just stick to what you're good at. Yeah, you could just throw it deep to Marvin Harrison and probably have won this game by 30 points without any incident or question. But
what's the fun in that?
What if secretly you're awesome at bubble screens? Mm-hmm. What if that's your passion and talent? You never knew it.
I think also in this process of Ohio State self-discovery, they helped Penn State discover themselves as well. Sure. Penn State, you didn't think you could score.
Yeah.
But look at you.
Yep.
You made a plan to get to the end zone. Mm-hmm. It took you an hour and you encountered many mishaps along the way, but you persevered through them, through the dumbest scoring drive of the day.
This is also an especial like emotional sop to an Ohio State fan base, at least 30% of which has either already or will in the future drop out of school to try and become a mobile DJ.
You can do it.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
You don't know that you can't. What if you become the world's first DJ masseur?
I've rigged these turntables.
Definitely exists.
Yeah. Amateur on both counts.
Ah, shit. We're back on the Miami game. Just like that.
Bro, we're going to get that Big Ten money. We're going to open up a disco / massage parlor.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely mm-hmm. not a sketchy business.
In Madison.
In Madison, bro.
Can we talk about what the fuck Wake Forest did today?
Oh, my God. The Michael Hennig speed run. I've never seen anything like this. Kids, ask your parents.
Yeah, I want to go to the third quarter. Yeah, the third quarter. The third quarter.
All right. At halftime, Spencer, what is the score of Wake Forest Louisville?
At halftime, the score in Wake Forest Louisville is 14-13. Normal American football score. Normal American football.
Sounds like a game Scott Satterfield is ready to lose.
That's right, which is what they all want. Remember Scott Satterfield? Scott Satterfield.
He's 100% not getting fired this year. 100%.
This remake of Shawshank features Scott Satterfield stuck in Louisville, and he keeps trying to get out, and it's just not happening.
No, This isn't Shawshank. This is where they're like, hey, listen, we made the wall really weak. Just like fucking dig. And he's like, I don't know. I'm having a good time here.
This is Papillon if the next island was like 8 feet away. Like, it's like all you have to do is jump over this ditch. Welcome to Crapillon, the right. Story of Scott Satterfield, trapped in Louisville.
14-13.
Yeah. Normal American score.
Then what?
So, it's very important that we pick up Holly's reference about Michael Hennig. Michael Hennig was the Mississippi State quarterback who, I believe, in 2007... or 2006, played against LSU opening weekend and threw a full 6 interceptions in one game. Like, they just kept him out
and
there.
Stayed in.
Like by the time he threw 3, we're like,
who was Spencer? Was this Kroom?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Kroom era. So, like,
okay.
Yeah, so, like, 6 turnovers. You did the full Hennig, right? So, first possession, Wake Forest. Interception for a touchdown. That is correct. 4 plays into the drive, Sam Hartman is intercepted. Kentrell Clark returns it for a touchdown. Okay, that's cool. Wake gets the ball back. You clearly don't understand the plot of the movie you're in where you say, oh boy, we get the ball back, because guess what Wake immediately does? Sam Hartman fumbles again. And it is, nothing happens there. We're 20-14, okay, because Louisville can't do anything with it. We're in some peak ACC shit. All right, so Wake gets the ball back. Again, you think this is a good thing. About 7 plays into the drive, Sam Hartman is again sacked and fumbles. And it's recovered by Momo Sanogo. And Louisville scores. So now we're at 27-14. Game's getting a little bit away from you, Wake, but I got faith.
These are fluky changes. Like, they can't persist.
Mm-hmm. Unless you make a habit of excellence, which in this case is shit, because your habit of excellence and shit, because Sam Hartman throws another pick. At this point, if I am counting what I believe is his 4th turnover of the third quarter.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Of the third quarter.
So you're saying he's getting reps.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? What do champions do? They keep going, right? They're like, no, I'm not done.
You've seen Tin Cup. You know how this goes.
You see the water?
This is more of a Bull Durham, by which I mean it's a slow lovemaking.
Oh, wow. All right.
Hit the mascot. This is someone told Sam Hartman to hit the mascot.
I can't ever remember that stupid fucking speech. It was the joke was supposed to be, but it's slow and wet, and it felt like it lasted 3 days.
Second and 10. 3:46 left in the third quarter.
Where's Pat Dooley when I need him?
We're at 34-14. This was 14-13. And Scott Satterfield's begging to be fired or released from Louisville. And other teams just keep spitting out, belching caramels for him to devour. So he'll stay in Louisville. Sam Hartman is sacked and fumbles again. Fumbles again. And two plays later, Louisville scores. Mercifully, there's a punt.
An intervening punt. A brief respite from turnover nightmare.
So certainly we're done at this point.
I can't tell you what it's like to look down at the remote and realize you're not doing that catch-up via key plays. And also that this is all from one game and it's happening in real time. Like, there's around the third one, this like cloud of unreality starts to permeate.
Yeah.
All right, so listen, Wake gets the ball back at the 39. It is now, it's bad. Things are bad. It's 41-14. But, you know, they get the ball back, and this is about pride. And they get all the way down to the Louisville 17. And then Sam Hartman throws another goddamn pick that is not only picked, but returned from the 17 for a 90-yard interception return for a touchdown.
He's refining the craft.
If I remember correctly, that was the last play of the third quarter, yeah?
It's the last play of the third quarter. We started at 14-13.
And then the bad things are done. It's a whole new quarter, boys. This quarter's starting 0-0. Just win this.
Wrong.
They got us in the last one. We'll get them in this one.
First two possessions of the first quarter, fumble, interception.
Hey, the first two possessions of the fourth quarter are done. From here on out.
Oh, boy.
As of a few weeks ago, it was like, uh-oh, the ACC is looking pretty interesting territory, and Syracuse is hit hard times. Wake, it's
only the twin titans of Clemson and UNC remain.
Only the Tar Heels remain to provide a little counterweight against Clemson.
By my math, just to close out the story, Sam Hartman had 271 yards. And one touchdown for Wake, and he had 136 yards passing for Louisville with two TDs. So he was arguably their best passing threat because Malik Cunningham only threw for 164 with no touchdowns.
Hey, can I jump back to Jimbo for 1 second?
Please.
Yep. Please.
Yep. Speaking of ACC powers.
We have a question from Bailey. I was very upset in the middle of this game because I thought that Lane was going to ruin our $95 million bowl eligibility watch, which is my new favorite thing as of Jason's watch grid this week. And Bailey asks, would it make it up to you if it turns out Jimbo could have played a functional quarterback this whole time and just chose not to?
That is a really good question.
Yeah. A fantastic scenario.
Like I am not all the way there yet because there were also a lot of points in this game where Ole Miss decided to just rush three. And so, like, the degree to which this was a full test is, I think, a little bit in question. But, yeah. Let's talk about a successful program instead. UConn beat Boston College for the first time ever. The first time they've ever... Now, they don't play... They've only played 12 times, and there's like a 60-year stretch where they didn't play at all. But Boston College now has two wins. One is over Maine, and one is a one-point win over Louisville, and that's it. In this game, 30% of UConn's yards took place on the first two plays. They didn't need much more than that to beat Boston College. They turned Boston College over five times... I think only scored once off of that. They got a field goal.
They were laminating the dough.
This is This is Boston College sneakily having a fucking terrible year.
Yeah, they're just a step better than Northwestern, and it's not a big step.
No, it is
not a whole yard. Definitely no yards being gamed.
No, they still have to play NC State, Syracuse, Duke, and Notre Dame. Notre Dame, who fucking obliterated Syracuse today.
On the other hand, coaches who have Cameron Crewer, I'm having a small stroke. Coaches who have Cameron Jim Mora has ghosts, and we brought the television in to look at them.
Yep, correct.
He's undefeated. Thank you, Alex McDaniel, I believe, who pointed out earlier today that this should be a thing that we do every week, regardless of the season.
Yes.
I could not agree more. We could restore the frenetic energy of the old Storm the Dorm segments without the whole Joe Tess rifling through the co-ed's underwear drawers of it all.
This is a nice set.
I love a twin set. That's not what I meant.
What coach do you think has the most bizarre view of ghosts? Like the
PJ
most bizarre
Fleck,
belief.
Who thinks they are dead because they did not want it enough?
What is the ghost thing? I don't know anything that's happening here.
This was a game day segment.
Yeah.
Because we are coming up on Halloween. I don't really know the whole story about how we landed
Jim
on this.
Jim Mora lives in Connecticut, and all the houses there are real old. And he's like, "My house is haunted." And they're like, "Let's have a camera crew over to look at Jim Mora's haunted house."
Yeah, and it's
I
like
think we should have professional ghost hunters at every pivotal game's house.
I do wish it had just turned out that like Jim Calhoun had been squatting there and had Jim Calhoun and Paul Pasqualoni were living there in the basement. Mm-hmm.
Johnny McEntee is here.
he's on the lamb.
Lay a trail of Reese's Pieces out the door and turn Johnny McEntee back over to the government.
Leave him in the creek. Leave him in the creek, I tell you.
Jim Calhoun's just there for savings. That's it. He's like, right. Not a dime.
How much we pay in rent,
Jim? Not a dime.
He might be a handy guy to have around, you know?
He
might know how to fix a washing machine, what have you. So UConn is 4-5.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's
Ghosts on CBS.
I never thought we were going to do this, but let's play the bowl eligibility game with UConn. Who wants? We got to get to 6.
Got UMass. That's 5.
5. UMass, no,
UMass
that's
is,
5.
UMass is 5. Next and after now, that.
Now I need to fully understand that right now UConn is the most Antifa team, okay?
Because unpack it, that.
Yeah.
They're playing Liberty and Army.
Because they're playing Liberty and
sure.
Army.
Yeah. Okay.
The one team standing in the way of Christian nationalism is UConn.
Liberty, I assume we're going to call Liberty a loss because Liberty's... We're not?
No,
I don't know.
Hugh Freeze just got a big ass contract.
Oh,
it's time to
disappoint.
Not going to be working.
Yeah, that's true. That means
2030. Also, his preferred range of dining companions.
Okay, so it.
I'm just kidding. There's no fucking way Hugh Freeze is going out with a 30-year-old.
Maybe if he doesn't know.
I think 30. That's the chaperone.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're telling me it comes down to Army? They have to beat Army to get bowl eligible? Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. The Army one's just for better
Army's
bowl
just bonus.
Placement.
Army's just bonus. See if you can make the playoff.
Yeah.
You know what fucking sucks? Because UConn is independent, if they win 6 games, they won't make a bowl.
It'll depend.
They'll definitely be the left out team, and that'll just suck.
There's not always a left out team.
So you know, sometimes when somebody asks a question about a legal system or a code or something, you realize that you've stumbled into some sort of unwritten eldritch kind of law that you have no familiarity with, and is probably published in another language. Someone asked me today, "What are UConn's potential bowl tie-ins?" And I just heard the howling of the void, just like.
Oh my God, UConn has ancestral rights to the Rose Bowl. Nobody knew. They get to leap the Pac-12. How did this happen?
As soon as UConn hits the sixth win, we have to like raid the offices of Hobby Lobby to see what they've pulled out of the Dead Sea.
Yeah, no.
The documents are in there somewhere.
What a week.
I love that UConn, so they have been to one bowl since 2010. And their past two teams, 2020, 2021, were like game-breakingly fucking bad. Like terrible, even by UConn standards. Coach of the Year awards usually go to like whichever power conference team ends up like, Ryan Day. Thought they would be 6-6, but they're 10-2.
Oh, right. Who is that this year? Well, it'll probably be Josh Heupel.
Kansas wins a couple more
games.
That's
true. He's a good candidate.
That's probably off.
Sonny Dykes is a good candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Jim Mora the Lesser deserves to be in consideration for Coach of the Year. I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan telling you that, so you know it's true. So,
yeah, it's legit.
Man, the Illinois erasure continues.
I just said consideration. I'm not giving it to him.
Because let me tell you, brother, Illinois, they're going to win the Big Ten West 100%.
That's right. Why'd you add the word West?
Because I don't know who's coming out of the East. And if it's Michigan again, maybe Michigan, with the benefit of having lost to them already once, will have a better sense of how to beat them in the Big Ten championship game.
Also,
maybe.
Because if it's Michigan-Illinois, that's like Illinois against Super Illinois. Mega Illinois EX.
Hyper Illinois.
Super Hyper Street Fighter Illinois.
You know what? I'm going to say this because it feels so good. That's the 7-1 Illinois Fighting Illini.
Correct.
4-1 in conference.
Correct.
What a day when like lots of teams around their neighborhood in the rankings either lost or kind of look like shit. Illinois just like handled business.
Since they lost Indiana, here are the number of points Illinois has given up in its game since then. 3-0, 10, 6-14-9.
Jesus.
They are absolutely like Brett Bielema's just sitting on people. Man.
38 minutes of possession.
Yes.
Their points allowed right now, they're sitting at 71. Like, there are teams who could give that up in a day. UNC could give that up at any point, even when they're not playing.
Brett Bielema is the blackjack dealer who keeps giving himself 3, 2, 1.5. 0.66. What the fuck, dude?
A draw 4.
Skip. How did you give yourself skip at blackjack?
Hit reverse. Hit. No, we don't do reverses here. No, we're just only power.
I'm looking at the schedule, and at the worst, in year two, it's looking like Illinois is going to win 9 games, y'all, because they play Michigan State, who is dog shit. They're very bad. They play Purdue, who cannot be counted on to have any.
Purdue and Michigan are toss ups.
Purdue's a toss up. Michigan's a loss. Yeah, no. Well, yeah. At Michigan.
No, Michigan's a road game.
Yeah, they have to go to Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Michigan State, we're moving past Michigan State.
Yeah, Purdue cannot be relied upon to give anything like a consistent result in a football game.
Yeah.
They might have 42 first downs and lose. I don't know. You know, which, by the way, a great clash of styles between Purdue and Illinois is this. Purdue being like, go, 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 score, move, good, do things. And Illinois being like, I'm going to get off this couch.
You shall not pass.
nothing shall happen. Fucking Nurgle ass team.
Bert is kind of built like Nurgle.
He is just embracing. I love you just the way you are. Yeah, Burgle.
That's our entire recruiting pitch. You get to hug me. I'm your grandfather officially. Also, Illinois gets a finish with Northwestern. If that ain't a victory lap, I don't know what is.
I'm looking at like
this is a 10-win team.
This is proof that if you want to know, like, you know, sometimes an ecosystem is in the like throes of collapse and one species emerges that's not a good thing. Like,
I love
there's a lot of giant tapeworms in this environment. That's not good. The Big Ten West is in such free fall and collapse that this is the giant tapeworm. Illinois thriving in this environment where Bert's like, hey, I can win a bunch of games if I just don't try. Just don't do anything. Don't let anything happen.
If you explained to Bert what a tapeworm is, he'd be like, oh gee, thank you.
What is the conversation going to be for the, like, impressive bowl game that is like, listen, they won 10 games. You have to fucking... I know they're only going to score 23 combined points in the game, and whoever they're playing is going to fucking hate it. But you have to take them.
What if there's a situation where Ohio State and Michigan make the playoff? The Rose Bowl has fucking to take Illinois.
Great.
Hey, what could happen with Illinois in the Rose Bowl?
Fascinating things. Absolutely fascinating things.
Bo Nix throws 5 touchdowns, and somehow Oregon only racks up 26 points.
Bo Nix, like, that would be the best if they just drop 8 every... That's what they're going to do. Oh, my God. Illinois against Bo Nix will just be drop 8 and be like, do something. See if we care.
So, playoff rankings are coming. I'm gonna say a couple things about that. We're about to see which 8-ish teams the committee thinks might be in the top 4 a month and a half from now.
Is this your update on who sucks?
Very important. Yes. But from the different direction. Instead of ranking the top 25, we're gonna rank the bottom 2. Ooh. Because the race for the title of 2022's worst FBS team likely comes down to just 2 teams. UMass almost clinched the entire thing today, losing to New Mexico State team that had to travel by 2,000 miles. But folks, Akron is still in it. Akron also has a mere lone FCS win that was not dominant, and that is it. Charlotte, unfortunately, leaves the competition today, beating the shit out of Rice.
Fire your coach and you win! Fire your coach and you will immediately fucking win! This is what Auburn's doing, right? This is what Auburn's doing. Auburn is waiting until the Tuesday before Iron Bowl to fire Brian Harsin so that they can beat Alabama, right?
It's like hitting the booster. It's like jettisoning the fuel tank that was weighing you down this entire time. Auburn. So the list of teams Auburn has beaten by multiple scores is Mercer. Even Gene Chizik's worst team had 2 multi-score wins. Teams Auburn's beaten in regulation, San Jose State, or do I have that backwards? Is it just Mercer? Whichever. San Jose State and Mercer. Okay. Even Gene Chizik's worst team had more regulation wins, and I don't think Auburn's going to win any more games. This is Auburn's worst team since 1950.
Is it worse than what's the 3-9 team from
Chizik's 2012? Yeah, it's that's worse the one than I'm that. Comparing it to. It's like already worse than that. unless they pull out a miracle win down the road.
Here's the other thing. Now it has become a point where if they do win any of these games, their next game they're playing Mississippi State, who supposedly they're hiring the athletic director. I don't think that's become official, but that's what everybody was saying this morning. If they beat them, like, that's just... Nah. And then after that's... I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true.
You know how you know they suck? They actually played a pretty clean game today. And nothing happened. Like, they still lost by 2 scores to an Arkansas team that is gettable.
They are a non-entity at this point.
It's worse that they're not openly bad. They're not.
No, they are. Spencer, Arkansas ran for 286 fucking yards on them. They are openly bad.
God. All right.
I think their thing is they are consistently bad.
Yeah.
Not like, holy fuck, this game was the one that got you bad. It's just every single week they play the worst version of what a kind of boring Auburn team would.
Yes. Right. They are not explosively bad. They are just
that's
like
true. They're a chronic disease, not explosive diarrhea.
Each week they have a range of potential outcomes, and you know what the best one is. You know what the worst one is, and they do the worst one. We are used to Auburn expanding that range greatly, radically in every direction.
If Auburn is usually Ebola, this year Auburn is just mono.
It's just bleeding out. You know what's going to happen. You're just going to bleed. Yeah.
They're just IV.
Are you concerned at all about challenging Auburn with a statement like explosive diarrhea can't be chronic?
I am now. Yeah.
They do have to play Texas A&M.
which is the opposite problem. The most constipated team.
In all seriousness.
Something's got to give.
Yeah, no, just Jimbo Fisher sitting there with his like giant philo fax of plays.
Oh my God, Jimbo Fisher's.
I understand it's been. I understand it's been.
Give it a minute.
Oh God.
Nope.
Oh God.
We're not blowing past that one. Let it sink in.
That's horrible.
I'm going to put like 10 seconds of space in the edit.
I'm there.
Fishers. Sorry, that was just because Ryan had a real mean look on his face. Please continue.
No, it's fine. I understand it's been a year with a lot of teams with bad losses. Miami lost.
I can't relate.
Hasn't been about? You. Hasn't been, no.
Hasn't been you, yeah.
Tennessee fucking whips this year.
I personally cannot relate.
I do think they should have fished the goalpost out of the river and put it back in the stadium. Like, all soggy and shit.
Well, yeah, they could have saved some money that they need.
That's true.
All soggy.
I think they should have emptied it out ceremonially at the start of the game, because it'd just be like one radiated carp after the other shooting out. They should shoot whatever's in the goalpost into the stands like a t-shirt gun.
So, we just said Boston College lost to UConn 13-3, the first time they've ever lost to the Huskies. Would there be a more emotionally miserable loss this year than Texas A&M in this state of free fall, scrambling to try and like get any kind of handhold, losing to this Auburn team, which is spiraling even faster and worse?
Oh, that's a spicy meatball.
Wretched.
I don't Absolutely think I can come wretched. Up with a like more unpleasant outcome.
No.
Because it does nothing for Auburn other than just like spiteful hate, and you know, it doesn't save Brian Harsin. It also doesn't fire Jimbo. So it's just like it just creates bile and doesn't let it go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a cyst. It's just a deeply infected cyst. It's if they medical, lose that game.
It's a medical marvel.
If I'm Jimbo, there's no way. Or if I'm Brian Harsin, there's no way that new AD is getting my number. None. Like, hey, can you give him his number?
No. I don't need to know you.
What don't do need to know to you, man.
About? You know, you got my bank account number, don't you?
Wait, listen, man. When I hear that Venmo go off,
did y'all see the bitchy thing Brian Harsin did in the press conference today? I think it was to
can
Tom.
Can you be
Green.
More specific?
It was to Tom. I think it was to Tom Green. He was asked a question about like how. And this is true. Auburn's defense has slipped significantly this year. Not just compared to last year, but obviously, like, if there is a thing Auburn had previously been able to hang its hat on while the offense struggled, they put out some, like, very stout defenses that could keep them in games that they would eventually lose. And that's not true anymore. Like we just said, Arkansas nearly ran for 300 yards. So he gets asked about this. And he gets all like, oh, you mean you're comparing us to the teams we weren't here to coach? Yeah, man. That's how it works.
Yeah.
That's 100% how it works.
Yeah, dude.
Those guys got fired. We thought you would be better than them. Why is that confusing to you?
Yeah, it was like there was like some sort of warped logic that I can almost grasp.
Yes,
you know,
right,
like he said,
right.
What they did is not my responsibility. But like, but no, it's like, no. The point is, you are the variable.
We're not blaming you for the past.
We have a control group. You are the variable. Things are worse. It is not hard to deduce that you are the problem, sir.
Are you saying that Brian Harsin's grasp of statistical concepts like risk management and say immunity
would be tenuous at best? Yep, I am saying that.
Holly,
is Tennessee gonna be Georgia?
Oh, fuck if I know.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't think Tennessee had this is partly credit due to Kentucky, which I think had a good plan. It's just I think they had some good ideas. They just had some Kentucky was a snake bitten team tonight, man. But I didn't think Tennessee was particularly high energy tonight after about the first quarter. They had some spectacular tackles on Rodriguez in the first quarter. But I don't know. I still don't think we've seen this. We've seen this Georgia team in fourth or fifth gear. And if there's any team remaining on their schedule with the ability to throw them into that gear, it looks like it's going to be this Tennessee team. But I don't know. I still don't think we've seen Georgia's ceiling. And I'm curious to find out where that is. I'm sorry, that wasn't a joke answer.
No, it's fine. I am happy for you that we are to the point where we can talk about a Tennessee game and we can just talk about it and it's not...
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Okay. That was enough. That's all I got.
I'm sorry.
I want to address a question from the chat because I do love talking to the people. You know that people say that about me. They're like, man, he loves talking to the people.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cowan, who is from Atlanta, and I imagine is a Georgia fan, wants my reaction to the Brock Bowers touchdown. And my response is, fuck you. No. Don't need it. Y'all won. Eat my ass. I don't care.
Georgia's very good. And Florida fired their coach and is rebuilding.
They're very good and you beat our ass. What else do you want from me? Don't get greedy.
Can I talk about one real weird Will Levis moment tonight?
Sure.
Who, first of all, God, get this kid some help. I don't know how he is walking after some of the hits that he took, particularly the series where he was sacked on second and third down in his own end zone. There's some, the numbers are never going to be kind to, the big broad stat numbers are never going to be kind to Tennessee's defense due to pace of play and a whole bunch of other shit, but they got some ferocious swarming energy when they want to. But there was this moment where, and I would love to see the All-22 of this because I don't know what he was looking at, but Will Lewis is, like 15 yards out from the end zone and has open field in front of him and is running to his right and turns around and runs straight back into the pile that was in front of his pocket. And it kind of gave the air of like, dude, you know you're not a firefighter, right? Like, I don't know what he saw, but like there were just all kinds of, and it was super weird because I think Kentucky's coming off a bye coming into this, and there was speculation on the broadcast that they had tried to install a bunch of shit in the bye week and just kind of try to do a little bit too much, but I feel bad. I feel bad for Will. He's a better quarterback than he got a chance to show tonight because he was running for his fucking life for so much of it. But there was also that one weird backdraft moment where he was like, freedom. And then he turned right around and ran into a cluster of like eight people. Spencer, did you watch this one? I couldn't figure out what he was doing.
He just like me. Yeah. No, like there was a little bit of green grass over here and he was like, nah, I'd rather run shoulder first into a 300-pound man.
When you already have an injury to your throwing hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your shoulder. Oh, man.
Yeah. I will say this. I think that it was important for Tennessee to win a game where they couldn't, like, where they didn't really have, like, an epic narrative or anything, right? It was like, you got to beat Kentucky. Okay, cool. We beat Kentucky. In fact, they ran the shit out of the ball on like the second drive, which Kentucky. Okay,
that was really funny. Where that they was had, funny like, as a hell. 15 play drive and they had 13 runs. Like,
yeah.
I know that Heupel is not vocally a very like fuck you kind of guy, but it felt like a fuck you kind of drive.
There was a little bit of fuck you in that. Just a Susan of fuck you in that drive.
It was like the Cutcliffean fuck you of like, oh, you hate this? Oh, we're going to do it again.
Yeah, exactly. You don't like that, do you?
Doc, it hurts when I do this. Well, quit doing it.
Quit doing it. Here. Yeah. Quit punching yourself. Yeah. I thought like Georgia and Ohio State both had something in common, which is that they were teams that I thought took a punch and then gave back more. Right? Like, that's cool. I kind of wanted to see those teams stretch a little bit.
So after that interesting Penn State segment you described, mm-hmm. Ohio State, for the first time all game, was like, fuck it, three-play touchdown drive.
But yeah, like, let's just do what we
do. No, I'm sick of this. I don't want to play. Mom, I'm not playing with him anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, Spencer, you watched more of the Cocktail Party than I did. What do you think of Georgia after watching this? Because I still don't feel like I feel like there's some murkiness still around their ceiling, and I don't think we've seen them have to play like all out yet.
They're still a team that on both sides of the ball, offense and defense, has 180 XP to spend. Last year it was 100 XP on defense, maxed out, 80 on offense. This year it's like 90 and 90. Like, I think that they're a little more balanced. It might be 91-89, right? Like, it might be more, slightly more to the offense. But, like, I don't think you've seen when they needed to score, they did. They did so pretty easily. Stetson Bennett still makes some really dumb decisions when he's flustered. That's just something he's going to do. But he also makes plays, like, when they need to score, they absolutely get their ass downfield and score. They're just really good at every single point, so that if Bennett does occasionally have those misfires because he's pressing, doesn't matter. Does not matter. They're still going to get after your ass on defense, and they still have better players than almost every single team at every single position on the field. So that's what I think. I think that they got a little dicey at one point in this game and then immediately snuffed it out, just like Ohio State did. Like, similar trajectories for really good teams who are like, that was cute, fuck you, done, over. They can do that. They can end games, right? That's, if you want to know what the difference between like a really good team and a great team is, it's this shit stops now. We shut down. Like, aha, it'd be really funny if a comeback started now. Here's 14 points. Just putting 14 points, 21 points on you.
Well, so speaking of those Bennett mistakes, if we get more of those next week, do you think the defense is capable of clamping down hard enough to keep them in the game long enough for them to get the ball back?
I think that Tennessee could put them. I think Tennessee scores so quickly that they can outpace Georgia.
I almost think, that's, Holly, that's
the thing that I can't figure. That's the thing that I can't figure out. That's the matchup that I'm waiting on.
So, Holly, I almost think that's the wrong framing.
Okay.
Because I think what is interesting about Georgia is that it is not a question of if they fuck up on offense, can the defense immediately turn it around? Can the defense immediately get a stop or limit the damage? It's more a question of, like, how many times can the defense win a possession such that they are sort of building a bank account up where it's like, we already have that covered. We got two stops earlier in this game. So if you give them great field position with a fumble or a bad special teams player, or whatever, we already covered one of those.
No, that tracks. Can I tell you the reason I thought that?
Sure.
Is because this is watching watching this Tennessee team make weird light year-ish leaps all season has been just completely disorienting. But before tonight, I don't ever remember watching any Tennessee team and thinking, man, you just really can't make a mistake around these guys.
Sure. Right.
Like, that's kind of what put me in that frame of mind. It didn't really occur to me before tonight to think of them as that kind of team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
There is one thing that is a massive difference maker if he still is truly healthy and ready, because he appeared pretty frisky tonight.
Cedric?
Or today. Jalen Carter for Georgia.
Yeah.
That's an issue. That's a dilemma. That's a problem.
Counterpoint: three receivers whose names you know.
Three receivers whose names you know, and Fant,
is there a better name than Princeton Fant?
Princeton Fant can play
he gets passed over because we have a guy named Squirrel, but Princeton Fant, my word.
Squirrel White came in the game for a momentarily injured Jalen Hyatt, who turned out to be just fine. He got another 70 yards.
They should swap Princeton White and Squirrel Fant.
Squirrel.
I love this.
I love Josh Heupel, because they put Squirrel White in place of Jalen Hyatt, and he immediately called like a fade route for him. Mm-hmm. Immediately, it was like, if Squirrel White's like 5'9", he's like, fade route, go! And he almost hit it. Like, it was a beautiful ball and some good coverage managed to, like, actually disrupt the play.
That's the kind of shit that I don't... I was surprised that worked. I was, I respect Mark Stoops very much as a defensive coach. I was super surprised when they got burned multiple times on the same route, sometimes consecutively. And I'm definitely not counting on that to happen again next week, but also I wasn't counting on it to happen tonight in the first place, so who the fuck knows?
Yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to the first battle between top five teams in Athens since 1983 is
good.
What,
Lord, who was the other one?
That would be Georgia and Auburn back in 83.
Gross.
It was like a ranked 3-4 matchup, I believe, at the time. So kind of a testament to how underachieving Georgia has been for 40 years. That's over. Y'all have made it very clear that that's done for the moment, but that the last time it really meant this much, phones still had dials on them.
I'm going to crawl into a cave.
I'll make it worse. Notre Dame's going to be ranked, I bet.
Oh, fuck yes. That is worse.
Bring him back in.
You want to know why? They're playing Clemson next week. And the tricky media's got to make that a ranked win for the Tigers, doesn't it?
Oh, nobody's giving little old Clemson a bit of credit.
Oh, typical.
Little old Clemson.
Notice nobody talking about Clemson this week. I think that was because you...
No! Oklahoma State is off today. What is happening over here?
Just sitting over here with our Bindle on the train track.
How far are they going to drop? And also, I know they lost to a ranked team, but, like, how far do you drop them from 9?
I think is what... let me see let me do the idiot Mikey Barbaro thing and ask if you're asking what I think you're asking.
Please.
It sounds like what you're saying is...
Well, I'm an active listener and I've had to do this training several times after some issues with colleagues.
In this podcast, we're going to be exploring the intersection of my fist and your neck. God, I forgot. I started fantasizing about beating him up, and I forgot what I was gonna
sorry.
Say.
Oklahoma State is dropping
what,
the rankings.
Is what you're saying, is the argument you're making that this is, like, I can see an argument being made for this is clearly such a, there's an act of God quality to this game.
Yeah.
That makes me almost want to throw it out, but on the other hand, how the fuck do you throw this out?
So,
I mean, I'm not saying don't drop them. I'm saying, like, how likely is this to happen again?
And
how much did that figure into your...
Well, here's my thing.
Right.
I'm not defending
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State's top 10 case before this was they beat Baylor. Sure. They lost close to TCU. Okay. And they beat Texas. That's it. That's like, I mean, Baylor beat Texas Tech today and has pulled out of a bit of a skid, but is still, 5-3. Texas is fine. But 48-0 is just such a pummeling.
This is the kind of game where if you told me afterwards, they're like, yeah, seriously, everyone on the team had explosive dysentery.
All right, let's do it this way. Oklahoma's 9. Wake Forest, at the time we are recording this, is 10. You're very right. Oklahoma is not even receiving votes. So, Oklahoma State is 9. Wake Forest is 10. They both entered the day 6-1. They were not separated by a ton in terms of their overall point count in the votes. Wake Forest, Oklahoma State got blown off the map. Wake Forest also did, but are also in a fluky way. Wake Forest lost to the worst team, at least in terms of rankings, probably in terms of everything.
That's a great headline.
How far do these two fall, and do you want to
take them, brother?
let's
just
send them down a lot. I mean, Wake, you know, whatever. That's clearly one bad quarter, whatever.
Sure.
And at least they fucking scored points.
Right.
Also, like, Wake is
OSU,
like,
I don't give a shit. Dump them. But
yeah, Wake can be narrowed down to like a bad day on the part of a quarterback and some receivers.
Right.
Yeah. The thing is, this is also playoff ranking season when like people who actually put more time into their rankings than like tired sports writers doing it at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
They come through and then the AP sort of adjusts to the playoff rankings. So,
well, I'm also like, looking here.
This is the week when rankings are just all over the place.
Looking below them, Penn State lost, Syracuse lost, Kentucky lost. Maybe bad enough to knock them out of the 25. Cincinnati lost.
Brother, let's go ahead and slide you on down into like honorarium 20 to 25 at best.
Okay.
That's where you go. The honorarium, the like 25 to 20 space where basically it's teams we remembered who are good that we don't think are actually any good.
We are definitely entering a time of a year where it's like we're going to start ranking some, we're going to either start making some interesting choices. Like Oregon State could get ranked, and Oregon State I think is like probably worthy of that. I don't have a problem with that.
Oh shit! Hang on, I got you.
Bring it back.
Like if Troy got ranked, I wouldn't be particularly mad at that either.
Mm-mm.
But like, yeah, Liberty's gonna get ranked.
Says he can't be invited again.
Liberty's gonna get ranked. It's just gonna happen.
I would. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then UConn's gonna beat them.
Rank UConn.
Rank UConn, you coward.
Why not?
Damn it. Go ahead.
What do you have to lose?
Absolutely nothing. And nothing but your chains. Embrace freedom. Rank UConn.
Nothing but your spiked hair and flattened chains.
It looks like you're back.
So I'm going to give you a playoff scenario, okay?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Ohio State goes 13-0. And you know, maybe Michigan loses. Well, Michigan loses to Illinois and Ohio State. Okay, Ohio State 13-0, playoff number one.
Said it so breezily.
Sure.
Said it so breezily.
Illinois is really fucking good. Let's just face it. Michigan's eliminated. Ohio State's number one in the playoff.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Bama is your number two seed. All right.
Okay.
Number three, Clemson wins out. Whatever. Who gives a shit? They beat the sanitation engineers in their conference and the future milkmen they get to play every week.
Future milkmen.
dairy delivery aspirants. Number four, who do you take? And remember, the CFP at least makes a show of caring more about who you've beaten than anything else. All right. Yeah. Do you take the one loss Pac-12 champ that beat like one good team in the Pac-12 title game? Do you take a one loss Big 12 champ that beat, you know, a lot of solid teams, but like nobody really excellent? Do you take a one-loss Georgia that beat Tennessee, say, by a little at home and lost to Bama by a lot? Or do you take a one-loss Tennessee that beat the SEC champ and played Georgia pretty close in Athens?
Oh, shit.
I think you are discounting the Pac-12 a little too much, I will say.
Nah.
What if you have a champ who has lost a game by 46 points?
I hear you. But going off what you've said, which I'm not saying it's right, but I agree that this is how they run it. They are looking at more like what your wins are than what your losses are, right? Especially one that early. And if they can get away, I mean, if they do it in the scenario you're setting up, they know they're not putting a rematch together, which is the thing I think they would hate most about that scenario. But also, like, I don't know. It's not. Yeah, the playoff is just so fucking annoying. So fucking annoying. Yeah,
four is the right number, and we definitely need to make more of it.
What's Illinois' record in this example?
Well, they've lost to.
You said they beat Michigan. You said they beat Michigan.
Unfortunately, they lost to. Well, they didn't win the Big Ten, but. What? Which part?
The Big Ten title game? Yeah, was it intriguingly close?
No, it's like 20 to nothing. That's it.
Oh, that sounds close. Let's put them in.
Okay, put them in. All right. getting an immediate instant rematch against Ohio State. So the scenario I'm trying to tease out here is Tennessee.
Yeah.
Having beaten Bama. All right.
I just got nervous again, and then I remembered we'd already done it.
Yeah. Tennessee could be perilously close to a situation in which they need only three more wins to make the playoff, and I'm not sure it entirely requires one of them to be Georgia.
Oh, Jesus.
There's only one problem with your scenario.
Say Clemson loses a game. Say Clemson loses to South Carolina or UNC, all right?
Yeah.
Tennessee is really fucking close to clinching a playoff spot.
This cracks me up for, well, y'all know my philosophy on this. Winning a playoff spot would be fantastic. Stealing a playoff spot would be way funnier.
Bullshitting your way into a playoff spot.
There's only one problem with this scenario. What are you going to do when LSU beats Bama next week?
Oh, God.
That might make it even better.
It shows that Bama wasn't good to begin with. And then who's Tennessee beat? Nobody.
Tennessee ain't beat nobody.
Pitt sucks. Florida sucks. Kentucky sucks.
Bama is the one team that if you beat them, it counts for gold because Bama cannot possibly drop below like sixth and you got to stay ranked ahead of Bama.
Damn.
So,
that's a good point.
Yeah. Honestly, it might be better if Bama loses because then they get to just ride crest the wave of Bama the entire time.
Yeah, Bama, quit devaluing our win.
This is the worst international currency basket. It is the worst basket currency.
No, this is very good, Spencer. I think you're mistaken.
But like, you know how every couple years we reach like November-ish and it's like, shit, Bama doesn't even need to beat fucking Auburn. They have already clinched a playoff spot.
Sure.
That's good because they won't.
Tennessee is probably the closest team we can say that about it. I don't know that they need to win the SEC.
All right, folks. All right. I know you've been waiting for this. It's 1:15 a.m. on Sunday, October 30th. Y'all, I'm having fun. Wow. I've decided this is a good football season.
To be clear, I'm not saying Tennessee's going to win the title or make the playoff.
Clip that part, but clip out the "I'm not saying" part.
I am here for the premises of this exact scenario and nothing more.
What I'm saying, to be very clear, is that if there is a situation in which a team pulls that off this year, Tennessee is the closest.
But I might want this more than I want them actually getting a playoff spot outright.
But then it's this Illinois. Is way funnier. We agree. Then it's Illinois. Yes.
Because the
power of orange.
You know who these people are. Regardless of how they get the playoff spot, we will be absolutely unbearable. Maybe even more so if a playoff spot is given that perhaps took some finagling, because then it is clearly anointed by God. We can steal Auburn valor.
Goddamn.
Can we have an all-orange playoff? If Oklahoma State hadn't fucked up, we could have had an all-orange playoff.
I'm not sure it's possible. Unless USC, red and yellow mix.
I'm just so sick of the red team supremacy.
I think you're just all disrespecting Clemson.
You're also ignoring if Illinois wins out.
Just put them in the playoff in every scenario.
If Illinois wins out, they'll get the Big Ten spot. They only got one loss.
Spencer, explain again how we are disrespecting Clemson by slotting them into the playoff at every turn.
Oh, now you say we're good. Now you say we're good.
Okay, who Spencer are you hasn't to say been that listening we're good? For 5 minutes is no, what he just said.
No,
okay.
No.
Oh, you're. Oh, no, I'm just. No, here's the move. You're trying to gas us up. You're trying to inflate our ego because you like the idea of big hubris Clemson getting humbled, don't you?
That's what I'm saying.
Fall for that because we're pieces of shit.
Hubris is a Greek word, and the Earth is only 8,000 years old.
I'm just here to foghorn, leghorn, country lawyer any argument against Clemson that isn't little old Clemson. All of them.
Damn, if Tennessee beats Bama and makes the playoff and is just like A&M, all you had to do was hire Josh Heupel. He was there the whole time. You met him before at your old work. Remember him?
Oh my God.
You knew him.
He's Rachel Lee Cook, and we have She's All That in him.
He even wore overalls.
See? But Jimbo's the one wearing glasses, like an Uggo.
Carrying 42 manila folders filled with his files and papers and his plays.
I hope they're all empty. I hope I hope every piece of paper.
Every one of them has a hand turkey.
Is Laura Mipsum.
Just a hand turkey that he's tracing slowly with a dry erase marker, not even a Sharpie.
The play clock is at 8. Jimbo has dropped 3 folders with 15 hand turkeys on the ground. And it's like, call timeout! Dang it!
Oh, Jimbo put a binder clip on his tongue again.
Well, those hand turkeys are going to come in handy for the game of the year for the Aggies, which will be Thanksgiving weekend against LSU with bowl eligibility on the line.
The $95 million bowl challenge.
What bowl will that be if they potentially go?
Oh,
Jason, you know these things.
The options are tremendous. It could be the
options are so good.
It could be the Gasparilla Bowl. Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's the ambition at this point.
This is where I want Jason to sell me a car.
Because there are no good hotel rooms in Memphis. They are all damp.
No,
like,
you want them. You want Gasparilla because then it's Jimbo and divorced Tom Brady. Just being like, we don't need anybody.
Oh God! Yeah, man, we're gonna graduate. We're That's never it. Gonna see each other again.
Hey, man, I really get you.
Their drinking habits have to be fundamentally incompatible. Jimbo's like, well, how am I supposed to have a daiquiri without strawberries in it?
Jimbo's like, you know, they can't stop you from eating the waffle batter at the hotel bar.
I think Brady is sort of like I'm having a lot of fun watching Coach Jimbo drink. Like, just vicariously drink.
Just horrified watching him drink a Bloody Mary that's filled with nightshades and alcohol.
And blood.
He's going to show.
He likes that part.
Jimbo's going to show up. He's going to be like, see, divorce isn't that bad. I wear it well. And Tom Brady's going to be like, oh, my God, oh, what Jesus. Have I done? Oh, my. Thank you, dark. Thank you, dark spirit of Christmas yet to come. You've taught me so much. It's not too late.
Tom Brady looking in the mirror, like, flinching.
Gronk, fetch the fetid goose.
Is Gronk the spirit of Christmas present?
I think Gronk loves Jimbo. Yeah. Gronk loves Jimbo for one reason.
His name is Jimbo. Yep.
My roommate's name was Jimbo.
He starts calling Tom Tombo, and Tom's like, oh, Jesus, I gotta call Giselle.
It's 4:15 a.m., and Gronk is yet again doing the helicopter nude on the bar, the wet bar at Tom Brady's house. And Jimbo is like, Tom is like, Spirit, show me no more.
Welcome to Tombo Calls.
Please, Spirit, why do you torture me so?
Anything is possible with TomboCom.
Michael Caine is there, and it's not even cool. That's how bad the scene is.
Jimbo is trying to explain his contract to Gronk, and Gronk's like, that can't be fucking real. And you're just a coach? You don't even catch any touchdowns like me?
You're not even very good, are you? Or you wouldn't be here.
You won 6 games? What, are you playing 6 per year? That's crazy.
Gronk is like calling Diplo at 5 in the morning and being like, you gotta hear about this guy's contract.
Diplo's like, I told you not to call me at work.
It's Scott Storch. It's definitely Scott Storch.
No. Hey, sorry, this is a deep cut.
I just met the richest man alive.
Storchbo, I got news.
Hey, Deadmount5, get over here. You gotta hear this.
That's his real head, dude. I know you don't believe me.
His real mouth.
I assume Drew Bledsoe is the ghost of Christmas Past, and he's just like, I'm not answering. No, I'm not doing this.
Drew Bledsoe is their sober driver.
I think that's a great place to stop for the night. The full cast. The full cast after dark is.
Show me no
out.
More spirit.
Show me.
He falls into the open grave. It's they do the Mickey's Christmas Carol version of it, where it's, God, it's actually a beautiful line. He kicks him in, and see, so they're like, you know, whose dark and lonely grave is this? And he's like, why yours, Ebenezer, the richest man in the cemetery. And he kicks him into what looks like hell. This is a children's movie.
The most eligible bachelor in Tampa.
Portal of hell coming out of a grave, but Tom wakes up and he's just on a bed at a Hampton Inn, and he's like, oh God, I'm itching.
No.
I'm itching.
I got a hand job at Busch Gardens. No.
jeez. Every
yeah, who hasn't? Yeah. All right, that's been the Full Cast After Dark, y'all.
Bye.
Yeah. Suppose that's technically true, that this has been the Full Cast After Dark.
Thanks to everyone. Thanks to everyone for joining us.
1,300 people in here.
And for the 1,300 people. All right.
Let's do a good night, Moon. Good night, Big Sky. Good night, Terrence. Good night, Joel. Good night, Eastern Kentucky. Good night, Sanford. Good night, Jordan. Good night, Jim.
Good night, Coach Bass. Good night,
Scott.
Good night,
Travis. Good night, Nick. Good night, Derek. Good night, CJ. Good night, Mark. Good night, Podcat. Good night, Nobody. Good night, Mush.
Good night, Rick. Good night, Coach Gronk, up on the bar swinging his dick.